This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone.
We've got an exciting... I was listening to the words for the intro and it's like, exciting books, yes, always exciting books.
Always so exciting.
Yep. So today we're talking about queer stories, which I was thinking about, was like thinking about that in terms of how women wouldn't say, I'm a female writer in the same way. Like it should just be normalised, you know, well like,
yeah, you're right.
But it's not like a genre unto itself the way that when women were first writing novels, they're like, she's female.
Yeah.
She must be a feminist because she's writing. It's like, no, she's just a writer.
I do feel like, especially this year, I've noticed, I think it's getting a bit better of like, I don't know, I've noticed quite a few of like the popular contemporary literature fictions are queer.
Yeah.
And it's not really mentioned as like, you know, they're not being like, it's a queer story.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is good. No, I can't think of any examples, but I remember I did think of that when I was in the bookshop being like, oh, like, yeah.
I think it's great. Like, one of the books I'm going to talk about today was like that for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really great. But we'll talk about that soon. So what book have you bought then?
So my first book I read, this came out last month, is called Chosen Family by Madeline Gray, who is a writer and critic from Sydney. And you may know the name from her first novel, Green Dot, which was a really big hit. I haven't read it, but I really want to. I was reading the reviews and I was like, oh, it sounds like me. It was kind of an example of that. I think it has queer stuff in it, but it was not really in any of the marketing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, she's quite an interesting woman. She's a master's in English from the University of Oxford and a PhD in feminist literary theory from the University of Manchester.
Oh.
So
is she still based in Australia or is she based in the UK now?
I think she's still based in Australia.
Oh yeah.
From what I was reading. So this is an Australian book. It's set in Sydney and it's very grounded in that place. I did grow up there, so it was quite fun like reading about all the different places in a new light. So the book follows this friendship between two women across the decades. And the story is told in a non-linear way, so we get hints of the future while we're following the girls' early years in the past. So it's a combination of a queer coming-of-age story blended with the experience of single motherhood. And it centres around Eve and Nell, who meet at the age of 12 at the hellish place of an all-girls private school. We can all imagine what that's like. They're both misunderstood by most of their peers, but they find this really deep friendship and connection with one another. And then Eve's feelings for Nell grow to be more than just platonic, and Eve finds herself ostracised by her classmates and Nell, and finishes high school friendless, and she's really struggling to understand herself and her sexuality. And then you get to see, which was really quite cathartic, she goes to university and reinvents herself and really finds her crowd in the queer community. And then she kind of finally starts to live this life that she's always felt like she deserved, which was really nice to read. I didn't know if it was necessarily that realistic, because it was like...
what, too tightly wrapped up at the end or...
No, like it was just easy? Like... I was like, maybe other people, life was like this, but it was like, Eve goes to university and is really funny and cool and makes two cool gay friends and is immediately really good at sex.
Yeah.
And okay. It was like, okay, but I was happy for her.
Yeah. Sorry, what era did you say it was set in?
I think this was set in the early 2000s.
Okay.
So the characters are very similar in age to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, Eve is really finding herself at university and then gets this big shock when Nell just appears at a party she's throwing. And then their friendship rekindles, and then they do eventually go on to form their own family. But there's this resentment and bitterness from adolescence that is still burning in Eve.
Mm.
So the novel is really punctuated by these two portrayals. when as a teenager Nell wounds Eve in the way that only a best friend can, and then in adulthood after the two have reconnected and made this decision to forge an unconventional family together, Eve repays that hurt with a really big betrayal that turns their family apart, tears their family apart, excuse me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really liked the way it switched between the two times. At the start, I was like, it felt a little bit clunky, but then it really, I think once Madeline Gray finally like kind of found the pace, it really worked for me.
I suppose once you get to know the character,
yeah,
as
that
well.
Was what it was like. Yeah. And she does write the characters really well. Like, I found reading, I was like, they're a lot like you wouldn't call, especially Eve, likable. But you do like her, but she makes a lot of really terrible decisions and behaves badly and that sort of thing. But it's like, it's really believable. I'm like, you know, everyone has the capacity to be like petty and
yeah,
make those sort of decisions that you're like, don't do that.
I think it's also that thing of like unlikable characters being quite popular at yeah. the moment as well. Like it's quite, yeah.
yeah. So I really enjoyed that. It felt realistic. Sometimes it was really hard to read, cause especially, I don't know, it's the same age as the characters. And I was like, oh, I was so, like, silly and made some terrible decisions when I was their age. And in the story, they decide to, like, Eve has a baby and then they make this, like, Nell's the other, like, co-parent together platonically. It's all very messy. Yeah. This is also a real lesbian horror story, so...
the what not to do.
That sort of intense... homoerotic friendship in high school and then
okay.
growing up and having
kind
all these, awful twisted feelings for each other.
Yeah.
But there's hope in it too. I did enjoy it. The only thing I didn't love was the dialogue sometimes felt completely unbelievable. Like, you know, it's like too sharp, like too witty. I'm like, people don't talk like that, I don't okay. think.
But don't you find like Sally Rooney writes like that though?
You're oh,
like,
she does, on, which, I do also, like which I do also take issue with because I find it really pulls me out. And so I'm like, you can write dialogue that's believable and funny.
It's like putting a filter on language in the same way you would a photo.
Yeah, I agree. So that was my criticism of it. And also some of the lingo, like as a period piece of in the early 2000s, I don't think all of the facts line up. I was like, we weren't using that lingo.
Like slang.
The slang, yeah. Especially like the queer slang. I was like, I don't think people were saying that
okay.
back then. But it was fun to have like quite specific location references. Like there's like a Supre bag mentioned and I was like, oh, I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, overall I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was a pretty beautiful, difficult story about two difficult people
yeah.
finding love and like growing up. And, yeah, I guess learning how to build a family successfully when the blueprint you were handed was unreadable, so that both the characters have bad family lives. But, yeah, great. I recommend it.
Cool. Yeah, it's always nice to hear about an Australian writer as well. I feel like there's not enough crossover between New Zealand and Australian
yeah.
writers. Like, we should be reading each other's work more.
Let's lift each other up.
Yay. So, yeah, the book I read this week was called We the Animals by Justin Tours. I think that's how you say his last name. So he's one of those people who studied at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. I feel like lots of amazing writers come out of that. And he's an associate professor of English at the University of California in LA. So this is actually a debut novel, which I didn't realise. He's got another one that's more recent called Blackouts, which was published in 2023. And I think you said you read that.
Yeah, I did a show on it, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I forgot about it. We've done so many shows now. So, yeah, this is like a Bildungsroman, like coming of age, about three wild brothers of white and Puerto Rican parentage who live a rough and tumble childhood in rural upstate New York during the 1980s. And so, yeah, the protagonist is the youngest brother, whose name you don't learn until the end of the book, which I thought was quite an interesting detail and one that seems like the text is kind of full of tiny subtleties like that. Mm. Like it's not till the end you're like, hang on, I don't actually know his name, but you hear his brother's names all the time. Mm. So it's a novella in size. Yeah, if I'd been told what the novel was about, I probably wouldn't have really been interested in picking it up. However, something grabbed me about it, and it's like, okay, yes, because it's published by Granter, and I usually like what they publish. But from the first page of the book, the reader is taken into like the chaos. It's like you just straight into the action of like the chaos of these three young boys who are pretty much like left to their own devices. And there's this scene early on where the three boys are at home and they're getting up to like trouble. And then the mum comes home and you're thinking, oh, they're going to get told off. But she joins in with their fun and you're kind of like, oh, okay. And then you learn that she had all three of the boys when she was still a teenager. So that kind of explains it. And the relationship between her and her partner is quite tumultuous. She works in a brewery like at night shifts and he kind of has odd jobs there and here and there. But yeah, it's quite, I wasn't aware that it was a queer text until the end of the book, which I thought it added like a really interesting layer to the story, and it makes me actually want to reread the text again. Yeah, I thought it was quite awesome that that wasn't really pushed because you're really there with the young protagonist telling the story. Yeah, I don't want to, I guess because it's such a small book, can't really say that much about it, but it's really easy to read and beautiful and vivid and very much sort of, yeah, reflects that kind of recalling as a child of vivid memories. And he does it so well. I can't quite pinpoint what makes him. It's such a clever book. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. And it's also been made into a film in 2018.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, it's already been made into a film.
Yeah, yeah. And so I haven't seen the film, but I want to watch it now. But the film's had lots of rave reviews as well.
I'm going to look that up because I love blackouts, which you can listen to my review of it if you want to know more.
But pretty awesome writer. Like, yeah, he you know, graduated in 2010 and then, yeah, had this published the next year. So this must have been, like, part of his thesis.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really stunningly crafted book, and it's quite quietly devastating and rough and raw. And the relationship between the father and the youngest boy as well is like cruel and kind and complex. And yeah, it's wonderful. Anyway, so yeah, highly recommend. That's Where the Animals.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to read that because yeah.
And it's like you can read it in one sitting almost. I mean, I read it in two, yeah.
Could also be a good summer read.
Absolutely.
I mean, anything's a good summer read, really.
Yeah. Yeah, all books.
Any book. So the second book I've read recently in this theme is called The Lilac People by Milo Todd. And this is a story this is a historical fiction novel. And it follows Bertie, who is a trans man working at the Institute for Sexual Science under the renowned Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld. So I read the back, I was like, oh, I was instantly gripped because I love that period in history, and it's one that I've just recently this year been reading a lot more about because I didn't really know about it, this period of like Germany, pre-Nazi Germany, where it was actually queer people could live quite openly. So yeah, the clinic is... This was a real place, and it was a real hub for its patients, and it was also really open to the community. So they offered like tours to understand trans surgeries and care, and there was lots of conversations hosted on contraceptive care and disease prevention. So like, you know, really forward thinking stuff that you wouldn't think at that time, but yeah, it was all happening.
Aggressive.
Yeah. So Bertie and his friends are really like loving their newfound freedom there, but then we all know what happens next. The world is upended when Hitler comes to power. And during this time, the Institute was raided, queer individuals were targeted, and, yeah, that really shattered the community. There was so much knowledge lost during this time because the archives of the Institute were burned. And, yeah, so many records is just gone that we will never get back. Which is really sad, and I was pleased to see a book that was talking about this view of Nazi Germany, which I feel like you don't. I haven't seen a book about it before, especially like a fiction one, of trans people during Nazi Germany. So yeah, Bertie and his girlfriend Sophie escape to a rural farm where they assume new identities and then live in secrecy for over a decade. But then as the war nears its end, their fight for survival becomes bleaker when Carl appears in their backyard, who was a young trans man who has just fled from Dachau, the concentration camp, and offers this really chilling information about what is happening to people in their community. And this I didn't actually know, which I feel like I should have known, but in a particularly cruel twist, the long-awaited American soldiers who were liberating the concentration camps are sending the pink triangles like Bertie back to jail as a punishment for being queer. So,
oh, God.
You know, liberating everyone, but yeah.
Only the select few.
Yeah. So then faced with that devastating reality that their safety is still very uncertain, the three of them decide to flee to the United States, which does come at the cost of having to conceal their true selves once again. Yeah, I thought this is a really powerful novel, and I think I'm really glad that it's been written. Yeah, it's really evocative and a really vital reclamation of LGBTQ plus history. It was hard to read because you're reading about what's happening in Nazi Germany, and it is very eerily familiar to what's happening in, like, America, for example, but also what they're trying to push through here and in many countries around the world. So you see in, like, Hitler's first 2 months, he had erased passports, chosen names, and the small cloak of safety provided by medical professionals. And, yeah, it's a really hard book to read. You're, like, holding your breath for the characters, and it really is a page-turner. And I really love the characters. Bertie, Sophia, and Carl are really wonderfully fleshed out and, like, human, and a really beautiful example of this queer community that we can create. And, yeah, the whole journey is suspenseful. Yeah, as I said before, it's a real page-turner. And
quite horrendous with this.
It's a hard read because I found myself being like, well, I'm glad that they're not alive to see today. Not that they're real characters, but yeah, you know what I mean.
And something can be so progressive and then do a full U-turn.
Yeah. I just kept thinking a lot about the author, Milo Todd, who was trans, and well, the impact of writing this book must have been in doing this really intense amount of research, because it's so well researched and you can tell that it really comes through. And doing that in this time that feels eerily similar, I'm like, they must have paid a real toll.
And where are they from?
America.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was an interesting read because some of it did feel quite heavy-handed for me, of like telling things of what happened in this period, like a little didactic, like, I'm really going to make sure you understand the connections to now. But then I was like, is that just my opinion of being relatively well informed on queer issues? Like,
I guess it's like trying to act as a educational novel, yeah, as well.
So I had
right?
to be like, I'm going to take a step back and be like, I can still enjoy this,
yeah,
and be like, yeah, I may have already known this, but a lot of it I didn't know. So I can just deal with feeling like, oh, I already knew that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought this was a beautiful, touching, and it's a hard read, but very rewarding. I recommend it. Great. Everyone should read it.
And remind us of the name again.
It's called The Lilac People.
The Lilac People. It's a great name.
Yeah, it's a great book. Important book.
Right.
Yeah.
The last book I'm talking about is also a bit heavy, kind of, well, somewhat. So it's Olivia Lang, your favourite, Bella.
My favourite.
She's known, I mean, I'm sure some of our listeners know who she is by now, but she's known for her sort of creative nonfiction. One that I really liked was The Lonely City, Adventures in the Art of Being Alone. This is her second novel. It's called The Silver Book. It just came out, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago.
Yeah, I feel like it was last month, maybe.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, it's a queer love story that's embedded within real life, and it features the famous Italian filmmakers Fellini, who was an Italian film director and screenwriter. He's known for his distinctive style, which blends fantasy and Baroque images with earthliness. A lot of people are influenced by his work. And I started watching one of his films. They're brilliant. I'm like, why do I knew the name, but I hadn't, yeah, gone down that journey yet.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to watch before I read this book.
Wonderful. Yeah, yeah. I recommend. And then the other person is Pasolini, who was an Italian poet, writer, film director, actor, and playwright. He was considered one of the defining public intellectuals, in the 20th century Italian history, influential both as an artist and a political figure. And then there's also another character who's based on real life, and he's a costume designer called Daniele Donati. So yeah, the story opens at the peak of its art and intensity. For reasons initially withheld, Nicholas, the book's protagonist, flees London for Italy. In Venice, he meets real life set designer Daniele. Danilio Donati. See, my Italian's really great. Who takes him first as a lover and then as a paid assistant, where he then whisks Nicholas off to a studio in Rome, where Fellini is filming Casanova, which I haven't actually watched, but I'm going to now. So later on in the book, they travel to a remote villa, which is the setting for Pasolini's notorious masterpiece of fascist brutality, the film Salo, which I realised I did watch this in my 20s. It's something that they probably showed film students at university. It's pretty intense. It's not until near the end of the story we learn the reasons why Nicholas has left the UK and why he struggles to find comfort in his new life. There's quite a lot of like intellectual musings into what is to be gay, especially during the 1970s, and how hetero men interact with both Nicholas and the infamous Pasolini, and of course Danilo, who's kind of at the centre of all things and is just like fabulous, like set designer, costume designer, and older than Nicholas, and always has kind of a young lover, but Nicholas and him develop quite a beautiful, unique relationship. So yeah, the book's sort of preoccupied with beauty, and it's set in a world of, you know, Italian cinema during the 70s, and overflows with film sets and feasts and dazzling costumes and cafe scenes. It's written in a style that is sparse and direct, which makes reading the book very enjoyable. You can pick the book up and down in the same way that you could sip away at an Aperol spritz on a hot Italian summer's day. The style of writing reflects the constant buzz around the film sets, the chaos, the glamour, the immediacy. So for Pasolini, he'd say beauty cannot exist without ugliness. So for Pasolini, ugliness was its own kind of truth, such that Rome could lay no claim to being the most beautiful city in the world. And this is a quote: if it were not at the same time the ugliest. You don't need to be familiar with the works of these film directors or screenwriters to appreciate this book, but you'll definitely be inspired to watch the films, as I have found myself to be. I watched this film City of Women, which is incredible. So that's a Fellini film.
Okay.
Like hilarious and just like a visual overload and absurd. And yeah, I've been chatting to my friend and we're going to put on a film night in winter next year at the Athenaeum Library, who's the people that sponsor this lovely show. Look forward to, well, keep an eye out for that because, yeah.
Very exciting.
It will be.
And you can get the book out from its name as well.
Also get the book out from the library. I really enjoyed this book. And I liked it because some of the chapters were just a page. A page and a half. So it's like you really can just kind of dip in and out.
Mm.
And, yeah, it just made me want to go to Italy as well.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
I know I could probably pick it up now, but I want to watch at least a couple of the films just so I have an idea.
Yeah. I should also add that it's also looking at how Pasolini died. So for people who are familiar with him, he was murdered. And people say he was murdered because of his political views on fascism, like being anti-fascist. And other people say that it was because he was picking up young men and got jumped. There's actually a John Waters video on YouTube talking about it. It's quite brilliant. Like John Waters talking about visiting his graveyard. So that's worth checking out as well.
So many roads to go down.
Yeah, there is. And I love that about a novel that it can just, yeah, that is true. Yeah. And interestingly enough, well, I guess, yeah, the books, it's only got men in it, but they're queer and wonderful. And yeah, Nicholas is quite a complex character. Yeah, you are kind of wondering throughout the whole book what it is that he's running from.
Is it a bit of like a, is it like a thrillery vibe as well? Or mostly sort of?
There's tension. Yeah, there's a bit of tension. Nice. But that's sort of part of the stress of the film industry as well, I find.
Yeah. Always operating at an incredibly high level of stress.
And fabulous. we're actually running out of time. So, yeah, I hope everyone's having a beautiful summer.
Yeah. And you can hear much more of us talking about queer fiction because that's pretty much the only thing I read. Every episode is a queer story.
But then also you could say every episode's got women writers. And
that's true.
Yeah. And sometimes Booker winners. And
yeah, we went through a real phase here.
We did. Yeah. But looking forward to a whole year ahead of interesting reads.
Yeah. Cool. Bye.
Bye.
Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.